It's the Amazing Rico Bronya Podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
Another ass whooping. Another big fat ass whooping. How we doing? Rico Bronya, late night edition. I just got home from Citi Field. Wanted to collect my thoughts, and here are my thoughts. We got our absolute ass whipped. And before we get to any aspect of this game, whether it's the crappy defense from the second inning, whether it's Francisco Alvarez being a problem defensively and offensively, whether it's some of the decisions Carlos Mendoza made, let's not lose sight over the fact that the New York Mets got shut out by Walker Buehler and four of his dopey friends. That's the reality. The reality is we all sat there freezing our ass off at Citi Field, waiting and hoping that things would be similar to other moments this season where they don't hit for five or six innings, and then voila, they wake up. Whether it was game four against the Philadelphia Phillies, or it was game 161 against the Braves, or it was the game against Milwaukee, game three. Like, you sit there and you just hope. And that kind of routine is eventually going to catch up to them. And that's exactly what happened in game three. They had so many freaking offensive opportunities early in this game. They could not cash in. You're facing a very good LA Dodger team. A reminder, they're better than the Phillies. They're better than the Brewers. If you don't believe me, they were the best team in baseball, despite the fact that maybe we disrespect them. And so you cannot rely on failing on offensive opportunity after offensive opportunity and just assume, well, you'll stay in the game. And then in the seventh inning, the magic happens. Because here's what occurred in game one of this series and what occurred on this game, game three at Citi Field. You fall behind early. You try to keep it close. You fail on all your offensive opportunities. And then eventually that two-run deficit turns into something bigger because it's very tough to hold the Dodgers down. And that's exactly what happened in this game. Go back to the second inning. The second inning of this game was such a golden opportunity. And it's not like the Mets were hitting the crap out of the ball. They had some very good at-bats against Walker Buehler. J.D. Martinez drew a one-out walk. Jose Iglesias hit a ball that really should have been played by Tommy Edman. He effed it up. Official score to me, could have called that an error. He knocks the ball up in the air, and then if he fields it cleanly with the bare hand, J.D. Martinez, who runs like me except slower, would have been out by at second base by a mile. But Edman botches it, so the Mets are given kind of this break. And then credit to Tyrone Taylor. Tyrone Taylor, who made one of the most underrated defensive plays in this game, I'll get to that in a few minutes, puts together a really good at-bat, drawing a walk. Citi Field's rocking, and despite them being down 2-0, they have the bases loaded and one out. And then you get to the albatross, that is Francisco Alvarez, who in the first pitch thrown to him, he gave us a clear indication of what we have noticed now for weeks at a time. He can't handle this freaking moment. He's swinging out of his shoes. He's losing the handle of the bat. And then he puts together a wonderful 0-for-3 with three looking strikeouts, including that one in the second inning that was an absolute killer. You can't rely on Francisco Lindor every single time. He comes up with the bases loaded in that inning, trying to bail out Francisco Alvarez. And I think Walker Buehler threw another knuckle curveball. And obviously Lindor didn't hit it. He strikes out. And the Mets fail with that golden opportunity in the bottom of the second inning. And they failed with another golden opportunity in the bottom of the third inning when J.D. Martinez, of all people, the great J.D. Martinez, who should not be in the lineup. And I get J.D. drew a couple of walks in this game, but in the third inning, when he comes up with two on and two out, when we're not all thinking the same freaking thing, which is I'd much rather have Jesse Winker up than J.D. Martinez. Enough, Mendy, enough. I understand he's a veteran. I understand he's been there before. I understand he's loved in the locker room and he's like another hitting coach. He has become a crappy singles hitter. That's all he is. When is the last time J.D. Martinez has gotten an extra base hit? When? Meanwhile, you have a guy in Jesse Winker who has pulled off that dramatic moment, who's hit home runs, who's gotten clutch hits, and you're facing a team in the Dodgers that possess one left-hander. That's it. One. So you don't even have to fear or worry about the lefty specialist that's going to come in, and then you're going to have to pinch hit for Jesse Winker. Enough. Enough of J.D. Martinez. I appreciate his contributions. I appreciate that he's like another hitting coach. And yeah, he could still put together a quality at-bat and draw a walk, which he did in the second inning, which he did in the sixth inning. He's not completely useless. He is just a singles hitter now. That's what he is. So enough of him. But this goes top to bottom offensively. I mean, this is basically everybody. They did nothing in this game offensively. They had four base hits, and three of them were either bloops or infield hits. Brandon Nimmo got that hit in the first inning. And by the way, he looks like he is playing through such pain. I have pain watching Brandon Nimmo play baseball right now. When he's chasing fly balls, when he's leaping for the Kiki Hernandez home run, when he's swinging and foul balls off. I mean, Brandon Nimmo is in constant pain. With that said, he did get on base twice. So let's have a party. But the first hit, one of the four rare hits the Mets had in this game, was that little tapper he hit to third base. Jose Iglesias, I talked about it earlier, was that ground ball to shortstop that very easily could have been an error. Tommy Edman should have made the play. The third hit was a ball that Mark Vientos blooped and Mookie Betts literally had in his glove and it just popped out. And then the fourth hit, the cleanest hit of the game, because those first three were not clean, was a bloop by Starling Marte with one out in the sixth inning. That's it. That's all they did. And over the course of this series, they have played 27 innings against the LA Dodgers. First of all, they've been shut out in two of the games. Game one, they got shut out. Game three, they got shut out. And if you go back to game two, they scored 90% of their runs in the first two innings. They scored the six runs in the first two. Luckily, they did add that insurance run in the ninth inning. So they have literally scored in only three of the 27 innings they have played. And they are not, they're not even coming close to winning this series if that doesn't shape up. If this offense, which is a big part of why they're here, doesn't wake up. 24 of 27 innings, they've done nothing. Enough of waiting for the seventh inning. Because you saw it in this game. Eventually, it catches up to you. So the headline, if you want a headline, and it's obvious, is they are not hitting and they need to wake up. Francisco Alvarez, I know Carlos Mendoza already said he's playing game four. Look, Francisco Alvarez should play game four because of the relationship and the chemistry that he has with Jose Quintana. And I value that, and I think it matters, and the Mets need to get the best out of Jose Quintana, who has put together this incredible run over the final month. So I'll give you that. But that is his last chance. Two things. Number one, it's his last chance. He's got to show you a pulse offensively. If not, in game five, hopefully they're not down 3-1. But if he continues to give you these at-bats in game five, I'm sorry. We're looking at Luis Torrens. So I'm with Mendy. I'll give Alvarez one more game, one more shot, because of how important he is to Jose Quintana. But that's it. Because Alvarez not only kills them at the plate with the three strikeouts, but now let's go to the other aspect of this game. The other aspect of this horrible blow. What was the final score of this game? 8-0? 9? I lose count. You go to the second inning of this game, and this is what was so infuriating until the Dodgers finally just broke it open when Kiki went deep and Ohtani went deep. But you go back to that second inning. Luis Severino issues a leadoff walk to Max Muncy. Fine. Can't have that happen. Understand it. Max Muncy, by the way, was on base all day. Was on base five times in this game. So the leadoff walk to Max Muncy, mistake by Luis Severino. He makes a big pitch to Teoscar Hernandez and gets him to tap it right in front of Francisco Alvarez. Francisco has to throw to first base. Has to. You cannot, in a situation like that, where it is going to be a very close play at second. I think on replay, he may have been out if the throw was perfect, but you have to rush it. It's not worth it. Not in the second inning, not with nobody out. You have to take the easy out. Hernandez at first base was an easy out. You cannot force the issue there. That was a terrible play by Francisco Alvarez. Terrible. And then, and I don't care about the Gold Glove finalists. I don't. Francisco Lindor's had a wonderful year. He's had a great year. He's my Gold Glove. He's your Gold Glove. The fact he's not a finalist, I guess that shows you that this is great as a Met fan. We're in the freaking National League Championship Series. We're in the NLCS. That matters more than if you're a finalist. Now, the reason I'm bringing this up is Luis Severino's a finalist. When Gavin Lux hits a tapper back to the mound, fielded cleanly, he doesn't. When Will Smith hits a tapper back to the mound, field it. Don't let it go off your freaking glove the way it did. So you've got three miscues, one of which was called an error. I'm not even going to get on my soapbox about official scoring because they're dopes with the way they scored that second inning. But whatever. Nobody cares about that. Alvarez's bad play and Seve not fielding his position based on the reputation and his success from this year killed them. Now, luckily, and I think this is one of the most underrated plays, and it was very odd how it developed at Citi Field. Tommy Edman comes up. Dodgers are now up 1-0 after that infield hit by Will Smith. And that was a great at-bat. That was a 9-pitch at-bat, and Will kept just battling and battling and battling, and Seve couldn't put him away, and then really couldn't put him away because the ball was off his glove. It was a comebacker. And Seve's got to make that play. And the whole inning looks different. The whole inning, everything is completely different. But instead, it goes off his glove, a run score. It's just a freaking nightmare. It's a disaster. But Tommy Edman hits a ball up the alley in right center field, and Tyrone Taylor made one of the great catches you will ever see. And here's what was so weird about it at Citi Field. I don't know if this came across on television, but the crowd did not react. The crowd was, I think there was two things going on. Number one, I think there was disappointment that a run was scoring on a sacrifice fly, because remember, when Edman hit that ball, there's first and third one out. So as soon as that ball is off the bat, you know it's a 2-0 game. The second thing was, and I know my dad was doing this, he was watching Starling Marte, so did not notice and did not see that it was Tyrone Taylor kind of leaping behind them or diving behind them and making that unbelievable, insane catch. But that catch saved another run. That's up against the fence. Another run scores. Will Smith would have ran from first and would have scored, I think. I'm pretty sure he would have. And the Dodgers would have been up by a score of 3-0, and they would have had second and third one out. I mean, Severino's day could have been cooked right then and there. So I know when you lose 8-0, it's very easy to forget about that, not think it matters. In the moment, it mattered, and it was just so odd how the crowd just didn't react to it. And I'm not sure if it was, like I said, the disappointment of a sac fly or just the confusion. Like, did he catch that? Did Tyrone Taylor actually make that play? How did that come across on TV, Hoff?
It seemed like it was going to be a significant, like, hit. I mean, we did see the angle. Taylor was coming through. So they had both guys coming through. So you knew that it almost looked like it was going to be a major collision. So maybe that's where, like, there was a gasp. But I think also the disappointment leading into that inning where you had misplay after misplay after misplay, another run scores. So it's just like, to me, I think that's kind of why there was no reaction, because it just felt like, all right, we're this is going to be a long day.
But here's what's crazy. So Taylor makes that catch, saves a run, probably two. Severino, to his credit, strikes out Kiki Hernandez, gets through the inning. It's only 2-0. Excuse me. I think the weather just completely screwed me up because I feel like I got a cold developing now, but whatever, it happens. The Mets, in the bottom of the second inning, that's the inning where they loaded it up with one out. So if Alvarez comes through or Lindor comes through and let's say rips one up for a base hit or goes up the alley, we're going to look back at Taylor saving that second inning as maybe the most important play of the game. We didn't know at the time the Met bats were going to be limp dick for the rest of the game. We didn't know that. I didn't know that. Maybe I should have known that. Maybe I should have known better. But that was a tremendous play by Tyrone Taylor. So at least here on the Rico, we're giving it some love. We're giving it some credit because it did not get a lot of love during the game. As far as Sevy is concerned, I got to commend Luis Severino. And I'm surprised I'm doing that because 4 2/3 innings, 3 hits, 4 walks, 2 runs, even if they're ruled unearned. Like, that's not the greatest performance in the world. I'll be the first to tell you. But I thought he showed a lot of guts. That second inning, which a lot of it was on him defensively, could have been worse. He got through it. The third inning may have been his most impressive job because he walked Ohtani. He walked Mookie Betts. There's 2-1 and nobody out with Freddie Freeman and Max Muncy and Teoscar Hernandez coming up. And he got through the inning. Got out of a bases-loaded one-out jam after Muncy got the hit. Got Hernandez out. Got Lux out. I thought he showed a lot of guts and then pitched a 1-2-3 fourth inning. What the killer moment was that fifth inning because he got the first 2 outs in the fifth inning. At that point, he's now put together a little bit of a run, retiring 8 in a row, and just could not put away Freddie Freeman and couldn't put away Max Muncy, who put together another great at-bat, drew the walk. And I thought Mendy was right to pull him right then and there. In fact, and I was debating this in that fifth inning. So he gets Ohtani to fly out. And then remember, Betts hits that ground sharp ball to shortstop. And Francisco Lindor makes an incredible play. And I know what everyone thought when Lindor made that play. It's the opposite of what we thought when Severino couldn't make a play, which is this guy's not a Gold Glove finalist. I don't care, but it's still in the back of your mind because that play he made against Mookie in the fifth inning was an all-timer. It was a hell of a play. Feet first slide, scoops it up, makes the great throw. I mean, that was just all-world defensively, but that did put up a little bit of an antenna for me because Severino's pitch count at that point was getting into the mid to high 80s. Third time around the order, Betts makes hard contact. I'm thinking back to game 2 against the Phillies. So at that point, I'm thinking, am I taking him out with 2 outs and nobody on? But I'm starting to think about it. When he gives up the hit to Freddie Freeman, that's when I was on the fence. All right, do I just pull him? Do I just take him out now? His pitch count's high. He's just given up a couple of hard contacts in a row. Is this the moment where I get his ass out the game? Mendy gave him an extra batter. Once he walks Muncy, clear as day, you got to take him out. And Reed Garrett, until he didn't, did a great job when he struck out Teoscar Hernandez. So at this point, Severino and Reed Garrett are doing everything they can to keep the Mets in the game. Everything. And this is where they now enter the Dodger bullpen because they made Walker Buehler throw 90 pitches, which is great, except they couldn't score a goddamn run off of him. You know, they made Walker Buehler throw 1,000,000 pitches, big freaking deal. And this is where I was starting to get very worried because going to this well that we talked about of just waiting and waiting and waiting is tough because eventually your bullpen's going to make a mistake. And that's what happened in the sixth inning when Reed Garrett got the first 2 guys out, gave up the base hit to Tommy Edman, balked them the second, and then ahead of the count. This was the killer moment of the game. It really was, more so than even the misplays in the second inning. Because as bad as those misplays were, there was still that naivete of, that's the second inning. They're down 2-0. Seve can't field a couple of comebackers. Alvarez has his head up his ass. It sucks, but the Mets always come back. It's only 2-0. As every inning went by and the Mets couldn't score a run, that 2 felt like a bigger number. That 2 felt like, whoa, are we ever going to score some runs? And the Mets came close. We talked about the guys on base. How about when Pete Alonso in the third inning, not sure it felt this way on TV, it did in the ballpark. I thought he was about to hit a game-tying 2-run home run when he hit that ball to left field. You go to the fifth inning. They made a lot of hard contact against Michael Kopech. Lindor hit one of the warning track. Vientos hit one almost 400 feet. So they're coming close, but the two is starting to feel bigger because they're not putting it together. When Kike Hernandez, and I've said this before and I believe it, very punchable face, when Kike Hernandez behind in the count 1-2, and I'm looking at Reed Garrett and I'm thinking, Reed, bounce a effing splitter. Bounce it. You're ahead of the count. And he threw a couple of splitters, did not bounce it, and Kike kept fouling the ball off. But when KK got that 1-2 pitch, as soon as it left his bat and started traveling to left center field, the F word was exclaimed out of my voice. Because you felt it. That's the moment the game was over. More than any other moment. More than the 2 runs in the second. More than the failed opportunity in the second with Lindor and Alvarez. More than the failed opportunity in the third. When that 2 became a 4. And of all people, Kike Hernandez is hitting a 2-run home run. I mean, you knew it. You knew it. I don't necessarily blame Mendoza. Maton was warming up. I think Maton was coming into this game to face Ohtani if Hernandez had reached. But remember, Reed Garrett had retired 3 in a row, and he gave up an innocent base hit to Tommy Edman. He did balk him to second. I was with Mendoza on giving Garrett one more batter. So it's funny. I look at the bullpen management of Mendoza in this game. I'm pretty much with him. My issue with Mendoza was how he handled the lineup and having J.D. Martinez in it. Even the decision to go to Tylor Megill. I think what you've got to do in a best-of-seven series, while every game feels huge and big and it feels horrible to lose, the Mets are about to play 3 games in a row. Well, they've already played 1. Now they've got 2 more games in a row, and hopefully they've got more games after that. And I think what you've got to do when you're down 4-0 is you got to make a decision late in the game, which is, all right, we're down 4-0. I believe the team can come back, but I can't use my A-plus relievers. I can't use the best of the best because I know there's a game on Thursday and I know there's a game on Friday. So going to Tylor Megill in the 7th inning, I have no issue with it. I really don't. And I don't call that a white flag. I know some may say you're punting or white flag or whatever dopey new age term you want to use to describe it. It's not giving up. It's being smart. It's saying, hey, I hope Tylor Megill can keep us in the game. I know he's capable of keeping us in the game, but I can't use my top end relievers to try to keep us in a game that in all likelihood is too far gone because our offense absolutely sucks. So going to Tylor Megill in the 7th inning, no issue with it. He got through the 7th inning. I mean, somehow, some way, put a couple of guys on base, walked a guy, which is, you know, so New York Mets. Mets have to walk at least 7 guys in a game. It's not a rule. They got to walk a bunch of guys. Couldn't be the 2024 Mets if they're not putting guys on base. But the 8th inning, and this is the problem, this is why holding a team like the Dodgers down while you wait for your offense to wake up is a very risky strategy. Because eventually, Shohei Ohtani was going to get one to hit. And you know what sucks about the Ohtani 3-run home run? Besides the fact that it's Ohtani sticking it up our derriere. So I'm sitting there. Place hasn't fully emptied out yet, but people are starting to leave. And as Ohtani was coming up, there were a few guys, and I'm not sure if it's because they saw me or maybe they were just listeners to the Rico and WFAN. They started chanting, "Where's your bookie?" And I was very happy. I said, "Great, right, here we go." A little "Where's your bookie?" chant. I'm not kidding you. As soon as the word "bookie" came out of their mouths, that was the 0-1 pitch that Ohtani sent to orbit. So it was like, here's the chant. And not that Ohtani has heard it, of course. I'm sure he didn't. But as that chant is coming, Ohtani hits the ball 10,000 feet. That just sucked. I got to tell you, and I know it's completely irrational because Ohtani's probably like a wonderful human being. I can't stand him. I can't stand anything about him. He did something before the game, too, that I noticed. So the game is starting. Seve's warming up. Ohtani's, you know, getting ready as the leadoff hitter. And, you know, he's, you know, in the on-deck circle, swinging the bat around a little bit. And, you know, there's 10 camera guys filming him because the Dodgers broadcast. Oh, I'm sorry. I meant the Fox broadcast. I get them confused sometimes. The Fox broadcast needs to have video of Ohtani doing everything. In fact, I don't know if you guys heard this. Did you hear the big announcement for game four? There's going to be live video of him pissing in the fifth inning. Yeah, they're going to follow him in the bathroom, and Ohtani's going to take his Ohtani out, and it's going to be all caught on camera. And, yeah, we're going to get to see Shohei Ohtani piss in the bottom of the fifth inning. Because, remember, he doesn't play the field. So that's usually when he goes to the bathroom. Bottom of the first, bottom of the second, bottom of the third. He actually can do it every half inning because God knows he's not playing defense. So I know that was my childish one-minute rant on him. But he's just so inferior. I didn't get to the point. So Ohtani's in the on-deck circle, and there's 10 camera guys filming him. And Ohtani very arrogantly shoos him away and says, "Hey, I want to see Severino," because he needs to, you know, analyze the pitches that are being thrown. Yeah, he's a douche. I can't stand Shohei Ohtani.
If you turn on FS1 now, there's a little graphic that says in less than 20 hours, Shohei Ohtani will lead off game four of the NLCS.
Oh, God. It's horrible. But he's a great player. Like, I want to make that clear. I know he's a great player. I did have visions, and hopefully this is not the case in game four. It did not happen, at least in this game. I've had visions of him pulling a Derek Jeter. First pitch, light bulbs going off, and he hits a leadoff home run. He did swing at the first pitch. He grounded out to Pete Alonso. But I have had that scary, scary vision. He is a great player. That top of the order, even though they didn't inflict major damage on the Mets until Ohtani hit the home run, is a very scary top of the order. I mean, when you're talking about Ohtani and Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman, very, very intimidating. But the reality is this. While I had no issues with Carlos Mendoza's bullpen management or Luis Severino and how he was handled, and I thought Severino pitched a lot better than that line will tell you, 4 2/3 innings, 3 hits, 4 walks, 2 unearned runs. This came down to the offense. And if the New York Mets are going to win game four, and dare I say win this series, the bats have to wake up. They have not scored a run against LA Dodgers starting pitching. Now, they didn't start a starter in game two. Ryan Brazier is not a starting pitcher. It was a bullpen game. And obviously, the Mets did their damage early against the Dodger bullpen. But on Sunday night, was it Sunday night? Yeah, I'm screwing up these days now. On Sunday night, Jack Flaherty, 7 scoreless innings. On Wednesday night, it was only 4 innings, but they could not score a run off Walker Buehler. 11 scoreless innings out of the Dodger starters. And obviously, Yoshinobu Yamamoto is going to be the guy in game four. Jose Quintana will be the guy in game four. As far as the rotation moving forward is concerned, David Peterson was not used in this game. I don't know if he'll be used in game four. We'll see. Obviously, the situation will help determine that. If he is not used in game four, David Peterson should absolutely start game five. If you're Carlos Mendoza and you have this weapon in Kodai Senga and you're like, I'm not sure how to use him, you can use him for an inning out of the bullpen, depending on how this game goes. But David Peterson, unless he's used in game four, and he may be used in game four. I'm open to using him in game four. They got to win game four. They got to even this bad boy up. So you got to pull out all the stops to win game four. And I will raise my hand and tell you that as much as I want Peterson to start game five, I would use David Peterson in the right situation in game four, which would then force you to have to start Kodai Senga in game five and essentially have a bullpen game. Because if you use Peterson in game four, the odds are he wouldn't be available in game five, and you can't necessarily follow the strategy you've used behind Kodai Senga. I am willing to take that risk because I do think game four is that important. I do. I also want to tell you this. I don't believe home field advantage means a damn thing. I don't think Citi Field means a thing. I don't think Dodger Stadium means a thing. So when I look at this series, this best of seven series that we're engaged in, I am not one who's going to give you the cliche of, boy, the Mets have to go back to L.A. up 3-2. I'd like to go back to L.A. up 3-2. I mean, who doesn't? It means they win the next two games. But it is hyperbole, it's over the top, and it's a cliche to say the only way the Mets can win this series is by being up 3-2 going back to L.A., as if they couldn't win two games in L.A., as if the Diamondbacks couldn't win two games in Philadelphia. Home field advantage, as much as we want it to matter when we're at home, and we pay a lot of money to see our team play at Citi Field, and we freeze our asses off, home field advantage means dick. So I just want to get that out of the way, because I know there's a lot of people who's like, they got to win the next two. I hope they win the next two. I mean, I'm not saying I don't want to win the next two. I just don't necessarily think that, like, winning two in a row in L.A. is like, oh, that can't happen. That's impossible. I also don't think that being down 3-1 is a death sentence. So, again, as much as I want to win game four and I want to pull all the stops out to win game four, I can promise you this, if they don't win game four, I ain't giving up. I'm not saying it's over. You got to sometimes make things simplistic. I always used to think this. About 3-0 deficits in Major League Baseball. And obviously, we saw a team come back from it. Now, I didn't have the microphone on WFAN to say it because the first show I ever did on WFAN was July 17th, 2004. So it was a little bit before the Red Sox-Yankee collapse. But what I always used to say when talking baseball was the 3-0 thing is like completely overrated. Someone's going to come back from 3-0 because all you need to do is put together a four-game winning streak, which happens all the time in baseball. It's not that intimidating. It's not that crazy. It felt that crazy because it had never happened before, and obviously it had never happened since. But 3-1 deficits, I've seen it a lot. I can name like five off the top of my head just from my own lifetime of teams coming back from 3-1. Whether it's the Cubs against the Indians, whether it's the Marlins against the Cubs, whether it's the Red Sox against the Indians, whether it's the Braves against the Cardinals. I mean, it's a very common thing. That is not me telling you that I want to be down 3-1. I do not. I'll be in the building for game four. I want to win. Now, this team has shown the ability to bounce back. I feel like that's a cliche that I have to say. But they have shown an ability to bounce back, and they're going to have to do it again because they've been blown out twice in three games in this best of seven series. A part of why I wanted to wait to do the Rico and not do a drive home is so I can hear from the people, so we can communicate with the people. And one thing we do have to figure out, Pete, I apologize, and we did this accidentally. I think it was a few weeks ago. You accidentally opened up the comments on the YouTube for those that watch us live, not downloading the podcast the following day. We got to find a way to keep those comments open all the time because we love the interaction. Even if I can't read the comments all the time, it's good to have them there. So once Pete and I figure that out, really once Pete figures it out, because I'm an idiot, I'm going to be perfectly honest with you, we'll make those comments public and we can all communicate. But I do have a lot of emails on the Rico Bronya. Before we get to those emails, how you doing, Pete? How you feeling on this beautiful, awful night/morning?
Pretty shitty. I'm exhausted. I watched the entire game. I didn't like sleep at all during that game. And usually I catch myself like missing an inning here or there, then having to go back and rewind it. I stayed up and watched the entire game, and it was frustrating because, like you said, it just felt after that Kike Hernandez home run that it was done. And I'm trying to be positive, being like, yeah, they're going to get one of these pitchers eventually. It just wasn't going to happen. And I'm not upset by it because I'm like, let these games get out of hand, whatever. The one thing I will tell you this much is, and I don't remember if you've mentioned this at all, but on the broadcast, Joe Davis and John Smoltz were going through the pitching strategy by the Dodgers and basically making it so that I think Lindor has now had 13 at-bats, and he's faced 10 different pitchers in 13 at-bats, basically doing their best to avoid seeing the same bullpen arms multiple times. So
I think that's very smart. I don't remember if I said this on the Rico. I was talking more about it in the context of the Yankees. I think it was the Yankees, the Yankee Guardian series, that when you rely heavily on a bullpen, what is very risky in a long series is showing the same bullpen arms to the same batters over and over again. I thought that really hurt the Yankees in 2019 in their series against Houston. And that was the series where Adam Ottavino basically pitched in every game. Like, if you see the same guys over and over again, to me, the advantage falls on the hitter. So I think that's a very smart strategy in the case of Dave Roberts. But they also have so many arms. Like, that's the scary thing about the Dodgers, that, you know, Michael Kopech is a tough arm. Evan Phillips, who we didn't see in this game, is a tough arm. Blake Treinen is a very difficult guy to deal with. Like, they have a lot of relievers. A lot of them. A lot of right-handed relievers. And I think that is very smart that you want to show Lindor as many different guys as humanly possible. Now, that becomes more challenging as a series goes on, because the hope is this series is going to be a very long series, that we're going to get a sixth and seventh game. So it does make it very, very challenging to continue to do that. But it is easier as a fan, not that I want to have two more of these, but it is easier as a fan to just get your ass whooped. You know, the brutal loss that, and we've experienced them, game two against the Phillies, brutal loss, game two against the Brewers, brutal loss. There were certainly plenty of them during the regular season. But these two losses that they've suffered to the Dodgers have just been, like, there are frustrating things, obviously, as we've talked about, but it's a lot easier to deal with a 9-0 or 8-0 loss than the brutality of a 5-4 loss. That's for sure. With that said, I'd like a win. That would be very, very nice, especially in game four. Let me try to get to as many emails as we can, because I'm going to pass out at some point. And I assume the people listening, if you're listening live, you're going to pass out too, because I think it's late. And now I'm feeling like crap, man. I think the weather just kicked my ass. And it was cold. Where I was sitting in the 300s, man, that wind was whooping. And I forgot my hand warmers. I made a big deal on the air today about my hand warmers and how they're very, very important. And I left them in my car. So I was not as prepared as I planned to be. Anyhow, let me get to your emails. I'm sorry. Chris O'Day. Hi, Evan. Sorry you had to sit through that tonight. Hearing Mendoza's postgame, he insists Alvi will be in the lineup and there will be little to no changes. His at-bat in the second inning completely changed the game. I've had faith in Mendy all year, but at this point, making no changes is insanity. I'd put Jesse Winker in left. I would DH Brandon Nimmo. Put Torrens at catcher and Jeff McNeil at second base. Alvarez is lost at the plate, and Iglesias not only isn't hitting, but his defense is now suffering. He looks tired. How can he possibly justify not changing anything at this point? So a few of those changes I agree with. A few of them I don't. Number one, Jose Iglesias grounded into a bad double play in the sixth inning, and his bat has cooled off. Look, he had one defensive miscue in that game against LA that jumps out at you. I don't know if I agree that his defense is necessarily suffering. And your option to replace him is Jeff McNeil. Jeff McNeil has had two at-bats since he's come back. Has he inspired you? I know that may not be fair. It's only two at-bats. But if Jeff McNeil had some good at-bats, maybe you'd be able to convince me. But I'm not fully sold that Jeff McNeil replacing Jose Iglesias is going to make much of a difference. I do agree with you about Winker. Jesse Winker needs to be in the lineup. It was a joke that J.D. Martinez played over Jesse Winker. The idea of DHing Nimmo is probably a good idea because it pains me to watch him be in pain. Where I really thought he was hurt was when Kiki Hernandez hit the home run and Brandon Nimmo jumped up, and when he came down, it looked like he re-aggravated his foot. And with Alvarez, I said this at the top of the pod, if you missed it, I think he should start game four because of the Quintana factor. But if he doesn't hit, that's it. I make the change then for game five. Just keep this in mind, though. As much as, you know what, boy, they got to sit Alvarez. You know, Alvarez is a mess, and he is. He's terrible right now. It's not exactly like Luis Torrens was doing anything offensively when he was getting to play during the regular season at the very end. That was certainly not happening. Chris Hughes writes, I feel responsible. This loss was so bad, I feel partly responsible for it. The Mets weren't playing the Dodgers tonight. They were fighting against a sleep paralysis. It's 1 o'clock in the morning. Paralysis. That's what it is. Paralysis demon that inched closer every time they left a man on base. But you only have to fight the sleep paralysis demon once, though. And we're still playing with house money. This game proved that we're not supposed to be here, but yet we are. The Dodgers still have a very real dangerous monkey to get off their back. The fact is that they're choke artists. I don't know what the hell he means by the sleep paralysis. What's the sleep paralysis demon that Chris is talking about?
I don't know. I'm not sure what he's doing currently. If he's enjoying an extracurricular activities, but sounds like it.
Yeah, I don't know what the sleep paralysis demon actually is. And don't give me this house money crap, and we're not supposed to be here. I don't want to hear that. I'm not a fan of hearing that kind of stuff. Matthew writes, random coincidence, but so far, the winner of each game in this series is the opposite of who won that game in 1988. If that keeps up, we're heading to the World Series. So he's right. And what that means is the Dodgers are going to have a lead late with a chance to go up 3-1. And Luis Torrens or Francisco Alvarez, but probably Luis Torrens, is going to hit a monstrous home run late in the game. And that's going to give us a shocking extra inning victory. And then we're going to win game five, lose game six, and blow them out in game seven. That follows the opposite script of 1988 that he's implying. And let's hope that's the case. He goes on to say, tomorrow we need to sit Brandon Nimmo for Jeff McNeil. DH Winker, bench Alvarez. I have a good feeling they're going to rock Yamamoto from the start, and Quintana will dominate once again. This series is far from over. Yeah, I'm not saying the series is over. I think it'd be dumb to say the series is over. I would tell you if they don't start hitting, the series will be over. If they get shut out for a third freaking time, the series will be over before you know it. Let me give you some numbers on the Quintana catching situation because I do think this matters to a degree. When anybody other than Francisco Alvarez is catching Jose Quintana, the numbers are very different. When Omar Narvaez caught him in five games, Quintana had a 4.61 ERA. When the immortal Tomas Nito caught him in only three games, Quintana had a 7.47 ERA. When Luis Torrens caught him in seven games, only seven, the ERA was 3.78. When Francisco Alvarez catches him, and this is 16 games, so more than half the starts Quintana's made has been with Alvarez behind the plate, his ERA is 2.87. And that is why, despite our frustration and our anger at Francisco Alvarez, he needs to catch Jose Quintana. He does. Ron writes, here are the changes we need to make. Francisco Alvarez needs to sit. You can put Mrs. Met behind the plate for all I care. Just get his bat out of the lineup. Jesse Winker needs to be the permanent DH. I agree with the second one. Luis Angel Acuña at second. I'm tired of this offense not producing. Met magic was cute, but this is the NLCS. Put your big boy pants on and hit. I agree with you about Winker. The other stuff, I'm not with you. Paul Schwartz writes, now that the season is over. Come on! We're doing now that the season is over emails. I'm going to read it, though. Why the hell not? Now that the season is over, the way the Mets have lost Game 1 and Game 3 of the NLCS has totally made me forget about how fun and seemingly magical this season has been. I thought it would be the season that changed the perceptions and actual fortunes of this franchise. Instead, here we are losing in ugly fashion to a juggernaut that's not us. And that's what losing does. There is no issue to pinpoint. The team just didn't win. And for a 35-year-old fan of all the loser franchises in the city, it just feels like it's never going to happen. P.S. I'm not sure what is more obnoxious. The Dodgers themselves, I'm looking at you, Kiki Hernandez, or Fox pushing this Yankees-Dodgers World Series that now feels inevitable. Yeah, they do have a lot of Aaron Judge versus Shohei Ohtani graphics. You know what's most obnoxious, Paul? You giving up. That's what's most obnoxious. You giving up. Yeah, they have gotten absolutely smoked in Game 1 and Game 3. No one can dispute that. But it is a best of 7 series. This series better not be over. So that's what's most obnoxious. Sorry, Paul. Sorry to attack you, but come on now. Season's over.
You know what? We as a Mets fans, this entire year, we've seen them bounce back every single time. What makes you think that tomorrow they're not, or later tonight they're not going to do that? Like, I'm honest. I'm asking you, Evan.
Well, first of all, I have some faith that they're going to bounce back, but I think the negativity probably comes from the fact that the Dodgers kicked their ass twice. And so there's this feeling of, wow, they're just a lot better than us. And look, the Dodgers were a very good team. I mean, if you care about regular season record, they're the best team in baseball. And that's with having an off year. That's with trying to piece together their rotation. They still went out there and won more games than anybody else. But I think that's where the negativity of we're done comes from. The Mets didn't lose 3-2 twice. They lost 8-0 and 9-0.
You have had during this quote unquote playoff run way back when in June, but the San Diego series where Diaz gave up a walk-off home run, the Arizona series where he gave up a walk-off home run. Like, you had so many moments that this team could have just died. Those were more of a gut punch than giving up 8 runs to the Dodgers. Like, yeah, we got our asses kicked. You move on. We've seen it so many times. And can I just say one thing, too? I got to be honest with you. I keep on hearing about people saying, change the lineup, change the lineup, change the lineup. We keep on talking like Torn's going to go in there and light the world on fire. Like Tyron Taylor, not for nothing, is playing a good center field defensively. He stopped hitting the ball, too. I mean, who has hit the ball is the question.
Yeah, and by the way, speaking of Tyron Taylor, because one of the thoughts I had, because I don't want to make rash changes. Like, Francisco Alvarez should start Game 4. I think I laid it out fairly about the success that Quintana's had. But I've thought about, hey, would you want to add more offense with Tyron Taylor struggling? And one of the ideas, and I quickly have to shoot it down myself, is, oh, yeah, what about Jeff McNeil plays left field and Brandon Nimmo moves to center? And I start to think about Brandon Nimmo limping around, and it's like, he can't play center field. So I do think that they've lost that option, because that's something, if Nimmo's healthy, you consider. And by the way, I wouldn't argue about it. I'd say, you know what? You give up a little bit of defense, but hey, why not? Tyron Taylor is probably a part-time player who the Mets rode during this hot streak, rightfully so. He's cooled off. Hey, why not? But I think Nimmo's foot injury, plantar fasciitis to be exact, I think puts you in a spot where you really can't even do that. And obviously, Jesse Winker's not playing center field, and Jeff McNeil's not playing center field. Joe Healy writes, waiting for the 7 train home right now. Terrible experience, but I wanted you to know that I heard many Where's your bookie chance in the 500s? Mets in six. Thank you, Joe. That's good. I'm glad there were where your bookie chance. The problem is it didn't freaking work. Justin writes, a gut punch to a diehard. I can't believe how much of a letdown that game was. I felt really confident going into tonight. I thought the team would feed off the energy of the crowd, but unfortunately, I feel like that ended once Alvarez came to bat with the bases loaded. He has become an automatic out, and that swing and throw off his back shows how lost he is. Mendoza needs to DH Jesse Winker. We need at least his swagger in the game to hopefully create a spark. I'm confident we still have more magic left, but I can also see a scenario where Sunday night is here, and instead of watching the Mets and Jets play at the same time, I'll be only hoping for a Jets win. I hope it doesn't come to that because I have a lot more faith in the Mets than I do the Jets. They do need the Winker swagger. I don't like to do the whole, if they lose in five, we are going to feel this way. Let the season end, and we'll all know how we feel. But as we sit here right now, the idea of losing three straight at home to the Dodgers and getting eliminated on our own field to the LA Dodgers is one of the most disgusting feelings one can have. So, Justin, I hope you're wrong. Connor Riley says, dead inside. Honest to God question. Is it illegal to voluntarily bat the pitcher ninth instead of Francisco Alvarez? I can't take it anymore. Love the pod. I hate everything else about my life. That, by the way, there's a ton of anti-Alvarez emails that I'm not even going to get to. Negative Dan. This is going to be the last one because, you know what? We're all going to be depressed by reading all these emails. Negative Dan, let's see if maybe he can make us feel better. The cold weather Mets. Everyone wondering how Ohtani and the team from California were going to deal with the cold October New York baseball must have forgotten that the cold weather Mets might be the worst offensive team the sport has ever seen. Were you not getting flashbacks to April and May during this? How many times did we watch weak, non-competitive at-bats and balls dying at the track earlier this year, just like tonight? And had to hear post-game about, just wait until it warms up and everything will be fine. I'm sure we'll get more of that tonight. We even had Brandon Nimmo using this excuse when it was basically Memorial Day. Unfortunately for these guys now, they have the impossible task of having to put up runs to win a game on this frozen tundra of Citi Field to get back to the warm weather. Combine that with the late season Mets MO of leaving villages on base, going 0-for with runners in scoring position and striking out in double digits. And that's the recipe for a team that's about to have the Dodgers spraying champagne all over the stadium on Friday. I cannot tell you how many times I have heard, whether it's about the Mets or anybody else, hey, it's the weather. Wait for it to warm up. And my counter is always this. Well, okay, great. You'll be better in May and June and July and August, but if you ever want to get to the ultimate place, you're going to have to hit the cold weather unless you're just hoping for Indian summers throughout October. Today was the first really October-ish cold kind of night, and I don't know if that's the reason the Mets didn't hit. I can't necessarily say the two are related, but anytime I hear about just wait for it to warm up, I do think about nights like tonight because you got to hit in the cold weather if you're a New York baseball team trying to win a championship. Well, we'll try it again tomorrow. That's all we can do. Another 8 o'clock start. We'll have another Rico after the game is over, probably just like this where we drive home. So figure about an hour after the game is over so we could sit down and have a nice long conversation about game four of the National League Championship Series. Remember, you can always download and subscribe to the Rico Bronya. You can always check us out on YouTube. But thank you very much for listening. And Met fans, this may end badly, but at least we're all doing it together. We'll all die together at least. Thank you for listening to a depressing edition of Rico Bronya.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.